If you can come in and take your seats, we'll get started. This session is to give you an update on the development of revised guidelines for the treatment of LTBI in the United States and the companion statement that is being developed as well, along with it. So the first presentation is by Randall Reeves, who is a retired TB from the TB program in the metropolitan Denver region and has been a member of the writing group for the guidelines for the treatment of LTBI.
Thank you. It's very, very, very nice to be here. I really enjoyed the program this morning. Really exciting work that's being done here in California. Just a kind of a quick overview of what I'm going to try to do in 15 minutes. The history of U.S. recommendations for INH treatment and then subsequent developments. Now, you can already tell that if the two guys who are talking about revised guidelines are both retired, we've already got a problem, right? And I've thought about how to make this entertaining, and I've sort of given up. I think if you would like an entertaining history, I'd recommend Ron Howard's documentary on the Beatles, 8 days a week. It's really a very nice one, but I'll do my best. I'm going to focus a bit on this IUAT randomized clinical trial in older adults with fibrotic lesions, talk about what's happened since the 2000 LTBI guidelines were published, and talk about this so-called current process, which started in 2011 and is still going on. And I don't have final guidelines to present to you today. They're still under discussion. I'll mention who the guideline members are and then some acknowledgments at the end. If you're having any trouble hearing me, please raise your hand and yell. So it's an interesting story, this 12 months, then 6 months, then 9 months, and then what's next? And it's sort of just a quick look. You know, in the beginning, it was really a fairly focused treatment on really high-risk individuals, inactive pulmonary TB, recent converters, and young children. And then it got expanded and was called chemoprophylaxis. And sort of anybody with a 10 millimeter with high focus or, quote, mandatory treatment of the inactive, untreated TBs, TSC converters, and so forth. And then INH hepatitis raised its ugly head in the 1970s with fatalities. And then we said, well, we're not going to treat people if they're over 35 unless they really have high risk factors for TB. And then I just want to show you a little bit about this 1982 trial because it was a very large trial. And it's the only one that was a placebo-controlled trial comparing 6 months and 12 months of INH. So there were 28,000 enrolled in all four arms. Let's see, the pointer is here, I guess. I can't do that. Yeah. So really good follow-up. Compliance with treatment, 90%, 80%, and 70% in the four arms. And 7% 5-year follow-up. There were TB cases 76, 34, and 24 in the 4-month, 6-month, and 12-month arms, and 97 on placebo. Three of those were fatal. Now, also, they detected hepatitis. This was an older age group, median age of 50 years. And so hepatitis was a much bigger issue in this population. So they had 95 on the INH arm, and three of those were fatal. Two in the 4-month arm, they only got 4 months of INH and they died on treatment, and then one in the 12-month arm. So this is really all we have to compare 6 and 12 months of INH. And this is a table from that study. I'll just point out the cumulative INH hepatitis at 6 months was 3.6 per thousand, 4.4 per thousand, and 5.2 per thousand. So these are really the more severe cases of hepatitis. And then the percentage reduction in the arms, if on the 4-month regimen INH, there was a 30% reduction in TB cases, it went up to 93% if you took 12 months. So now it's interesting if you look at this graph, here, you can see that this is the only 12 weeks. This is 24 weeks, and this is a year. And so you can see a real difference in those. But this is a unique group of people. It's only older adults with fibrotic lesions. And we really don't know whether you see the same thing if you studied contacts, young children, younger adults. But that's the data that we have. So in 1983, clinical and lab monitoring was recommended for anyone over 35 if we're going to treat those. And then in 1986, the recommendation was really INH 6 or 12. Pick your number. And so I think a lot of programs went with 6 at the time because it's like it's shorter, probably less toxic. And then Dr. Comstock went back and looked at his Bethel data, and he said, well, really, if you look at the amount of medication people took, it looks like there's a sort of sweet spot at 9 months. And so in the year 2000, without any randomized or controlled data comparing 9 months to anything, 9 months became the sort of standard regimen in the U.S. And so a lot of the newer studies end up comparing 9 months of INH with 4 months of rifampin and 3-HP and so forth. So the most recent guidelines, again, were in 2000. And since then, we found out that 2RZ is not a regimen to use, so that got kicked out. And then also since that time, as you've heard this morning, we're really in the situation now where the guidelines are trying to catch up with changes in clinical practice. People are using 4 months of rifampin, they're using 3-HP, and the guidelines haven't really gotten there yet. But we know that these shorter regimens are as effective, more likely to be completed, and at least as safe. And most of these treatment regimens have not been compared head-to-head, so there's a couple of network analysis, and I won't get into trying to explain that at all, except that it's a way of taking a bunch of studies together instead of comparing them all head-to-head. They develop this network and try to figure out, well, how would these relate to each other, given that some were done compared to each other, some were done compared to placebo, and some were actually just observational studies of no treatment versus treatment. The process for evaluation involved this PICO format, the population, the intervention, the comparator, and the outcomes. So which regimens have the greatest effectiveness and least toxicity, and the outcomes are both effectiveness and toxicity, and really the most important toxicity element in all these analyses, and the one that's most consistently reported, is drug-induced liver injury, or we call INH hepatitis. And so that it's rated as critical, important, or not. So this was a systematic review, and then this grade process was developed. The challenge is, I'll skip on to that. This is great recommendation. Strong, vast majority of patients would choose requires at least moderate quality of evidence, and further studies are unlikely to change the recommendation. And conditional means it's uncertain if the desired consequences outweigh the undesirable consequences, and further studies might change the outcome. So that's the grade evaluation. So there's great evidence tables or head-to-head comparisons of regimens and clinical trials, adults, children, HIV positive and negative. The committee prioritized these together. And then they prioritized the head-to-head comparisons over the network meta-analysis, but reviewed both. So I'm not going to go, these will be for you to look at, but it just gives you an idea of the number of effectiveness trials and the number of those trials that include evidence on toxicity, comparing 3-HP and 9 months of INH in different populations here, 3 months of INH and rifampin in different populations here, 4 months of rifampin, and some of these are compared with 9 months of INH or 6 months or placebo, and again, different age groups and different HIV status. And then the committee gave a lower priority to these comparisons because we really think 12 months of INH is pretty much not a player anymore. And then the continuous INH study done, like in Botswana, didn't seem to apply here. And certainly 2 months of rifampin pyrazinamide, unless you're talking about someone who got 2 months of 4 drugs, then you decide they don't have active TB and you say, well, they've completed treatment because they had those 2 drugs in their regimen. So the network meta-analysis, again, focused on prevention of active TB and hepatotoxicity. The nice additions, a function of the delay in getting the guidelines done, is that the 3HP study was done, and Dick Menzies' study on 4 months of rifampin versus 9 months of INH were completed. So there was a reanalysis that was prepared for the committee. And so this is just the network analysis results, and you can look at these again in more detail. The odds ratio, starting with no treatment, you can see 3HP has 0.36 incidence compared to no treatment, three to 4 months of rifampin, 0.25. And again, the confidence intervals of these, as you can see, overlap, even with the recent update with Dick Menzies' data. And hepatotoxicity, clearly INH either at 6 months or 9 months is higher than any of the rifampin-based regimen, short course regimens. So this is sort of what the committee came to in terms of a priority ranking. And these are not not final, certainly in terms of order, but these were like preferred with strong recommendations, moderate level of evidence with 3HP, 4R, which is 4 months of rifampin, and then 3 months of INH and rifampin. And I think one of the challenges with 3 months of INH and rifampin, again, is a lot of the studies were done in children, or a fair number were, and children seem to have less hepatotoxicity, certainly, than the older adults we see in the trial. So it may be that we're going to have to look at that regimen a little differently based on age. And then the real question is, when the recommendations come out, is 9 months even going to be listed as a regimen of recommended regimen, because compared to 6 months, there's just not as much data. But that's a whole different issue. So it might go from 12 to 6 to 9 to, I think many programs now, it's like zero. You know, INH is sort of the regimen of last resort. But that's a whole different issue. You heard a lot of that this morning. So again, the final recommendations are not out, but I think one could imagine that the short courses are going to get a high priority and maybe a different ranking. This is not a ranking of those, and certainly not recommendations. The previous slides really are from the ACET presentation that Tim Sterling gave back in December, and so those are public record, and you can really sort of say, at least at that time, that was the discussions that the committee had. And certainly INH regimens will have a lower ranking. So this is the writing committee. Tim Sterling is the chair now. I don't go through all the names here. You can see Charlie and Marcos down there. Charlie's going to talk about the next phase. And one of the problems we ran into with the grade recommendation, and I just kind of skipped over that slide, is that it's really designed to use randomized clinical trials in the evaluation. And when these guidelines were planned in 2010, the idea was to talk about what regimens to use, which is really what I presented here, who should we be treating, and how should we ensure that adherence is maintained. And those latter two components really don't fit the grade criteria, so it became very difficult, very onerous. And finally, after a period of time, the American Thoracic Society and the IDSA both said, you know, this has been going on too long, and we're not going to continue this, and we dropped the funding. So it's really being continued on really a largely voluntary basis with the support of the CDC at this time. I will just mention acknowledgments of Carol Dukes Hamilton, who's now retired, after trying to get this pushed through these three different organizations, ATS, IDSA, and CDC, and the struggles with those three components. I think now we're going to finally get the what to use out very soon, and then Charlie's going to talk about the next phase. And I'll just mention Fred Gordon, who has a long history of working with LTBI diagnosis and treatment, and died just recently in Washington, D.C. I probably should just let Charlie talk and see what time we have for questions after that. So again, we're trying to get the guidelines caught up with changes that are already happening in clinical practice. Charlie.